Hey, it's Brian Curtis from The Ringer, and I want to tell you about the Press Box podcast. The Press Box is a podcast for anybody who likes news, whether it's about sports or politics or pop culture, and wants to understand how that news really gets made. We have new shows every Monday and Thursday. We have long interviews with everyone from John Krakauer to Joe Buck. Your social media feeds are bursting with information every day. Let us help you sort it out. Join us on the Press Box.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
On today's episode of One Shining Podcast, we are back, and it is officially the off season in college basketball, but that does not mean that we are off. We are officially on, we are locked in, and we are doing our best to figure out what college basketball, the landscape looks like. And we got Eamon Brennan here to make sense of it all. We're going to talk about the portal. We're going to talk about testing the waters, the coaching carousel, NCAA ruling, schedule announcements. All that is what is happening in college basketball. There is no basketball that is happening despite all the way too early power rankings that are coming out. I don't know how they're power ranking. We don't even have teams. Some coaches only even have two or three players on their rosters. So we'll do our best to figure out who's winning the portal, make you understand why guys are having fifth years, why guys are in the portal, how the two-time transfer rule works in today's game. There's a lot going on in college basketball, so we're going to do our best to break it down. Myself, Eamon Brennan, we got Kyle in the ones and twos. He's flying up to Seattle, so he doesn't even have a microphone. So we're going to get into all that and more, but first, Woody Durham.
He takes the timeout. Technical foul. Technical foul. Technical foul.
Welcome back to One Shining Podcast. I am still your host, Tate Frazier, and I want to welcome you officially into the offseason. That is correct. We have entered into the offseason. A lot of times in college basketball, they say March is over, early April, obviously, as we know now, it's over, and we'll see you next year is what happens. But that is not how college basketball works anymore. We have headlines galore, and helping us sift through it all is the great Eamon Brennan. Eamon, great to have you back on the show, man.
It's great to be here. How are we doing?
I'm doing well. There is a lot to get through, and I figured we should put it into buckets because that's what we talk about on the show. We talk about college basketball. We talk about buckets. So there is the portal bucket. There is a lot of news that is happening in the transfer portal. It is 1 week away from closing, and that just means that you have to have your name officially, your paperwork in before May 1st. That does not mean that the decisions will be made by May 1st. That is a common confusion, but we're going to talk about the portal. We're going to talk about testing the waters a little bit because there's a lot of guys that they announce, but they keep their eligibility. It confuses people. So testing the waters, the NBA waters, we know how that goes. Coaching carousel, a lot of assistant coaches on the move, a lot of head coaches making big splashes. NCAA rulings, that is another bucket that we're going to talk about. And then schedule announcements because John Rothstein is working the line right now to figure out the matchups for the Big East and the Big 12 battle. So a lot going on in college basketball, a lot of buckets to hit. But I want to start with the first bucket, because you and I, we have to keep up with this. We have to keep up with rulings. We have to keep up with Congress. We know it goes all the way to the top in college basketball. And right now there's a House versus NCAA antitrust case that could result in more than $4 billion in back pay to thousands of student athletes. So that is like hanging over the sport. Will Wade talked about that a little bit. We had the temporary restraining order in December that allowed 2-time plus transfers. So now we live in a world where you can go anywhere, you can play anywhere. And the NCAA has on last Wednesday, kind of admitted that that's okay, you know, from their vantage point, because they don't want to deal with more court cases. So, Ewan, I turn to you. How do we get here? And like, where is the NCAA stability at this point? Because it feels like it's a house, you know, in California on a cliff, and it's raining a whole lot more than it used to in Southern California.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's been several years of, after decades and decades of very little complaint about the way the NCAA was run, at least from people outside of the NCAA structure. You know, you occasionally had people poking at it here and there, but really over the last 10, 15 years, and particularly like, what, the last 3-4 years, it's been one thing after the other.
2021, I feel like, was the start when we just got shot out of a cannon.
Yeah, it's like one thing after the other. The you know, sort of outside legal institutions in the United States, whether it's you know, high courts or state law, or you know, the unwillingness of federal lawmakers to get in with the NCAA. You know, when Mark Emmert was still president, he spent a ton of time, and I think it's basically the reason why Charlie Baker became the NCAA president. You know, a former lawmaker who's sort of ingratiated with fellow lawmakers, as opposed to a former university president who probably wasn't particularly skilled at lobbying. But, you know, Mark Emmert used to go up to Capitol Hill. I covered a couple of them because I'm here in the D.C. area, like once an off season, once a year, and basically beg for the, you know, United States Senate to get involved in regulating college sports in a way that would stabilize the NCAA. And it didn't happen. That appetite still seems to not really exist at the federal level. And so you have sort of this constant drumbeat of states writing laws that are different from each other. You have rulings coming down that invalidate rules the NCAA is trying to
enforce.
Enforce that, to make things a little bit more readable to, you know, players, coaches, and fans, you know, a little bit more legible. And those things are running up against the laws of the United States in ways that continue to make sort of this classic weird artifact of like the 1880s and the Ivy Leagues create, you know what I mean? To like raise upright young men on the fields of Massachusetts or whatever, has now become something totally different and is being treated as such. And as a result, you have kind of a massive change happening every season, every off season, in the way that people understand what college sports is supposed to be.
And now people reach out and, you know, we're supposed to be the experts here. And they ask, how can so-and-so player, you know, go here, now play there? How can so-and-so player play 5 years? Well, this is the final offseason impacted by the COVID year. So the extra year of eligibility that was gained in 2020-2021 season is now officially, this is the last crop of that. So now people don't have to worry about the fifth year, because there's a lot of people that are upset about this. It also brings in the question, will we even have four-year limits moving forward? I mean, some people say, why keep them on the four-year limit? And then we get closer and closer to professional sports and professional basketball. And then there's a world in which the college basketball turns into like some sort of weird version of the ABA, but in modern times, where it's like a competing league against the NBA potentially. I mean, who knows where this all ends, but we do know this. Every time it goes to court, the NCAA loses. And that is why the NCAA is doing their best to not go to court and trying to pass bylaws that fit into the current landscape. And in case you missed it, the current landscape is the wild, wild west. We did the good, the bad, the ugly this year because it was a spaghetti western. There was people moving all over the place. Tampering is at an all-time high. And that leads us into the portal, because the portal is its own game. Bill Self famously said to us that he is focused on next year immediately after losing in the NCAA tournament. And since he said that, he has been on a tear. Bill Self, I mean, he brought in AJ Storr, the number three transfer, played at Wisconsin, played at St. John's before. Zeke Mayo, a kid from Lawrence, Kansas, is going to come in and be a big piece for them as well. Riley Kugel from Florida. DeJuan Harris Jr. is returning. Hunter Dickinson is testing the water, so he could be back. So Kansas is fully into the portal right now. Indiana, a lot of people think that they have won the portal so far. They get the number one transfer, Umar Ballo. They get Carlisle from Stanford. They get Miles Rice from Washington State. Mike Woodson's on a tear right now. So like, as soon as the season ends, there is a new season that we now introduce, which we've had for a couple years now. But the portal is fully on and popping with this TRO and the fact that anybody can go anywhere. And when you saw all the headlines and all the fallout, I mean, do you immediately go, this is just the world that we live in now? And can you believe that Indiana and, Kansas are kind of the two teams that I would say are at the forefront right now of handling and dealing with the portal in a proper way?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think covering the sport used to be you, particularly, you know, for me, because I my stuff would always really ramp up in like January, February, who's going to be in the tournament, and then covering the tournament is like a whirlwind, and you get done with the tournament and you're exhausted, and you
get a break.
Before going independent, which I've done this year anyway, I take like a week break, week and a half, whatever, after the Final Four. And there was always an argument that like, actually you should wait and take that break in like June, July, after the coaching carousel dies down, after you know who's in and out of the NBA draft. But those used to be the two things that you were really worried mm-hmm. about. There were some transfers, but they weren't difficult to track or felt like you needed to be constantly on and monitoring them. And now it's gone so far in the other direction that I almost still think it makes sense for people to tune out for a couple weeks and then come back and be like, okay, who's kind of gone where? As opposed, I mean, you can follow it minute to minute if you want to. That's perfectly viable. And I think, you know, there are plenty of people doing that and paying $6
to them. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I mean, paying $6 a month to be in, you know, Trilly Donovan's Discord where they can get that stuff minute by minute. And I totally understand that too. But I do think it's kind of swung so far in the opposite now that you kind of want to just be like, all right, just let me know where everybody ended up here, as opposed to seeing everybody's list, because, you know, the number of graphics of like I'm leaving or I'm maybe leaving or I'm testing the waters, but I'm getting in the portal, thank you for everything, but I might come back, you know, I've decided to come out of the portal, it's such a constant overwhelming fire hose of information and possibilities that it has become difficult to track. And I think, you know, as much as I've kind of always been pro portal and pro, like letting guys go where they want to go. If coaches can do it, players should be able to do it, is like a core fundamental underpinning of that whole thing. I do also sympathize with casual fans or even, you know, hardcore fans and people who cover the sport for a living being like, I can't keep track of all of this. I don't know what's going on. And it's more work for me than it used to be to kind of know who's going to be where.
Yeah, Richard Pitino had a great tweet, which I think kind of summed up the coach's standpoint. And you know, I don't want to side with the coaches here, but I did think it kind of illuminates where we are. He said, quote, only 15 more days until I can be mean to my players again. And I thought that really captured where we are. It's like you basically have to reopen the recruitment and, you know, go back to recruiting certain players back to your team. And as far as Joe Tipton, I mean, this is the Joe Tipton era in the sense that Joe Tipton gets the first graphic, which Felix Akpara, for example, Ohio State, he puts a graphic out about 3 weeks ago that says, I am coming back. I'm excited to be a Buckeye. Let's go. Aaron Bradshaw transfers from Kentucky to Ohio State. Immediately another graphic from Felix Akpara. Now I am entering the transfer portal and I will be finding, you know, a new place to play. And then when he finds a place to play, Joe Tipton gets another graphic to say, I am, you know, going to play here in the future for Felix Akpara. And, you know, he's not alone. There's plenty of guys that are doing that same, you know, racket. And I do think it is the triple threat of today's college basketball. It's not the position on the court. It's I'm going to go test the waters. I'm going to stay here at this school, or I'm going to enter the portal and go somewhere else. That is the triple threat. And every single coach and every single person in administration and every single happy, to throw out the blue chips reference, right? Every school has a happy now. We saw it at Arkansas with the chicken, Tyson Chicken. It is the happy era of college basketball, because now happy is involved in the decision making of how much money do you want to allocate to a certain player. Baylor, there was reports that Jeremy Roach, going back to Discord, it could be $1.5 million. Now, I've heard from reliable sources that is not actually the number, but that's what's being reported from the happy standpoint, right? The guys that are, you know, the boosters are now a part of these decisions, which, you know, in blue chips, we were like, oh my gosh, let's clasp our pearls because we don't want to see people like this involved in college basketball. Now they're a part of a collective and they're part of the game. And the game is insane. The portal game has been wild. But what I think really shows that this is the future to me was Tom Izzo. Tom Izzo has been back in the portal. He got Hauser before, he got Walker, and now he's got Frankie Fiddler from Omaha, who is going to be his first portal splash since 2021. So when Tom Izzo says, I need the portal, after being a curmudgeon about analytics, about the portal, about the new landscape of college basketball, the fact that he says, I have to deal with this evil, this necessary evil now, that's the world that we're in. And that to me was like the white flag from the old guard. When Tom Izzo says, you know what, I'm getting in the portal and I'm finding a player, I feel like now we're officially moving slowly, but into this new wild, wild west of college basketball. So I think Tom Izzo was the signifier. And I mean, we can go through just some of the headlines. Like you said, you can just put your head in the sand and it probably would be a smart move because there's so much movement between guys going from here to there. Let's talk about the national champs. Dan Hurley's first call was to Terrace Reed at Michigan. Now he is committed to play for Dan Hurley. So they got a big man there to fulfill the Kling Kong replacement that they have. So were you shocked by Dan Hurley's first call in the portal? He obviously was very anti-portal after he won the championship.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, look, they've used it in the way that I think makes a lot of sense for roster building in 2024, which is you would ideally love your roster to kind of look like UConn's did last year, where you've got two, three really good players coming back from a good team. Who are developing, getting better. Maybe they're freshmen to sophomores or a guy that you transferred in a few years back who's gotten better, like Tristan Newton. You got a five-star freshman coming in and Steph Castle, NBA, you know, lottery pick, top five pick type player. And then, you know, a transfer too that elevates you, that's kind of like fits exactly what you need in Cam Spencer specifically. I think that's kind of the way to do it. And I think if, you know, Michigan, I think Tom Izzo would probably look at that and be like, you know, the Eric Musselman Arkansas model of, you know, changing your team every April, you know, with like 10 new guys is not something he's remotely interested in. But you look at UConn and you think, I could work with something similar to that. You know, I mean, Purdue, you know, Matt Painter is not exactly Mr. Portal, but Lance Jones super elevated them last year in a way that they absolutely needed. And that was kind of a direct response to the way they lost the game against FDU, where they had no sort of dynamic backcourt physicality or a guy who could play off the dribble and get you a layup when shots weren't falling. So, you know, I think there's degrees to all of it. You know, I can understand why a guy like Bill Self would be like, look, I'm going to load up on as many guys who want to come here that are top level players, because I am fully confident in my ability to take whatever team you put in front of me or I put in front of me. You know, depending on who's making the biggest decisions in terms of writing checks, and get it to a high level before the season, during the season. It may not always work out. You know, last year's Kansas team was a little disappointing and the roster building was a little suspect. So you can make that argument as well. But I could see why he would be like, no, I'll figure it out. Like, I have the track record of being able to eventually get to five, six, seven guys that I know are going to be like a top five level team.
And whenever Bill Self is down, he bounces right back. I mean, that's just what he does.
Yeah, for sure. But I can also understand, like I wrote about this last summer, where Marquette sort of not overly, you know, they weren't like, you know, chirping about it, but they made it pretty clear, like, look, our strategy is to keep our guys here and keep them happy and feel like they're wanted. And as insofar as we can do that, we think we'll have a good pro. Like, they kind of swerved out of the portal because they were happy with their core and had everybody coming back, as opposed to getting out there and trying to upgrade on it. So I think there are multiple strategies that can work, and you can, you know, the great thing about it is you can rebuild a team and a program really quickly. Well, I mean, we may see that with Indiana with the players that they've, you know, brought in. It looks like that roster is going to be a little bit more balanced moving forward.
You get Renew coming back, you get Galloway coming back, you get Mbako coming back. It's kind of like they get three new guys plus the three returnees, and you hope you can mix and mesh and it'll be good. Yeah.
And you know, I can see why a guy like, for, you know, speaking of coaching styles, I can see why a guy like Mike Woodson would be all right with that. He's a former NBA coach. You know, you're going to have new guys every offseason. You may get new guys in the middle of the season. That's just a part of what you did in the NBA for 25 years at a, you know, a moderately, you know, successful level. So it's just different. It's different strategies. It does allow teams to go really crazy and run off 8-9 guys and try and sign 8-9 guys, but you don't have to do that. And I think we've seen multiple approaches be successful, particularly at the highest level with UConn and Purdue.
Yeah, the must-bust approach is simple. He has already gotten guys locked in at USC. St. Thomas, Bryce Pope, Josh Cohen, Matt Noling, Isaiah Elohim. I mean, he's already, and that was a high school kid, but I mean, he's already worked in the transfer portal. Guys from Massachusetts, Penn, San Diego, Yale, you know what I mean? He's already worked and got his guys, and the must-bust continues. It doesn't matter the school. That's just how must-bust works in the portal. Like you said, everyone has their philosophy to it. I do find the Kobe Brea recruitment incredible because Kobe Brea, obviously from Dayton last year, best shooter in the country, 50% from three, 6 3 point attempts per game, and he's the most sought after guy really in the portal, because if you look at his top five, it is probably considered the modern blue bloods, right? UConn, Kentucky, Kansas, Duke, UNC are his schools that he is looking at, and he is the kind of tentpole of like every team needs more shooters, and they all see the number one shooter, and he's in the portal, and now Kobe Brea can pick from one of the top five programs in the country and say, I want to just go there and immediately have a role. And I think that's the other fascinating part of the portal. It's the musical chairs of the bigs. We've been witnessing that in real time, as you know, Bradshaw goes here, Akpara goes here, Janai Broome says he's going to stay at Auburn. We're keeping up with the bigs because everyone needs a big. But I do think Kobe Brea is fascinating because he is a specialist that now has top priority at the top programs in the sport.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, if you ask Indiana fans, that's the number one thing that they're, every transfer, like even Umar Ballo, who's obviously a really good big guy who had a really good season at Arizona. I think there were a lot of Indiana fans would be like, he can't shoot. We don't need this. You know what I mean? Like they're just so.
That's Indiana though. You got to respect it. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
but they were so locked in on what they didn't have last year, which was perimeter shooting. And it really killed the offense's ability, even when they were playing a little bit better down the stretch, to like create good looks. And I think has become one of the core complaints about Woodson. So, you know, you saw it from, again, the Final Four, Purdue, great 3-point shooting team built around, you know, with as many as four shooters on the floor around the, you know, the best big man in modern college hoops history. UConn constantly running sets to set up open threes. Alabama, just a 3-point generating math machine, right? These are the things that win at the really highest level in college basketball now. And college basketball has caught up to sort of the NBA's preference for space and up-tempo and a sort of stylistic difference from what it was 10, 15 years ago in a good way. But you have to have guys who can shoot the ball. It isn't enough to pound the ball and trade twos for threes anymore. It just isn't. And so, yeah, Kobe Brea is a top level transfer for that exact reason. He may not give you five assists or three rebounds, but if he shoots 45% from you for three, you're good.
Yeah, you just want 6 3-point attempts a game. Basically just trying to plug and play Kobe Brea. And if you had told someone 2 years ago Kobe Brea would be recruited by these five schools and be guaranteed minutes and shots, you'd say, what is going on in college basketball? That is what is going on. It's turned into a bit of a free agency roster construction. The John L. Davis decision is another decision that's fascinating in the portal. Obviously, the Final Four run with FAU and Dusty May, we all know him, a triple-double waiting to happen. He gets denied by Michigan. So now we have 3 years in a row that Michigan's trimester schedule, the credits do not compute to get in. TJ Shannon was first, Caleb Love last year, now John L. Davis. So he doesn't get to go play with Dusty May. Dusty May, though, does get Danny Wolf from Yale, does get Trey Donaldson, does get Reuben Jones, does get Justin Pippen, son of Scotty Pippen, and he also gets Roddy Gale, which goes back to a larger trope in the portal. Rivalries don't matter. Roddy Gale played at Ohio State, now going to play for Dusty May at Michigan. We saw Aiden Holloway played at Auburn last year, now going to play at Alabama. You know, you got Sean Stewart, who's over at Duke. Carolina's recruiting him. I mean, if that happens.
I was going to say, when is the first Duke-Carolina crossover going to come? That's big. And Louisville-Kentucky.
Those are
the two we need there, right. You know, when you know the walls have officially fallen.
That is the litmus test there. And now we have another crazy rivalry because of John L. decision and rejection from Michigan. He is now between Coach Calipari and Big Blue Nation, which is my favorite budding rivalry in recruiting right now in the portal and in high school. So your thoughts on John L. Davis, is he going to be the signifier of who wins the breakup? Because it does feel like Arkansas fans and Kentucky fans are at each other's necks right now.
Yeah, look, I've been a huge fan of John L. Davis, just like aesthetically, mm-hmm. You know, besides his production, he's been a fantastic, just super fun player to watch for for several years now. And, you know, the kind of guy from Gary, Indiana, that once upon a time would have been locked in at Indiana from, you know, age 15 or whatever, if he had risen to, you know, if he was in that sort of tier in high school. You know, this is the thing about the transfer portal as well, is guys that you think maybe don't measure up when they're in high school or early in their college careers can get there eventually. Or even guys just locally, you know, Tylan Boswell is another one who went to Arizona, who's from Champaign, Illinois, and now is transferring back to Illinois. And that was kind of the whole question about him last year. Like, how did Illinois let this guy end up in Tucson? And, you know, here he is. So, I think John Hill's decision is going to be fascinating. I mean, I think this is no offense to Kentucky or Calipari, because they switched up their, it's going to get a lot of taking used to, Arkansas and Calipari.
It's hard. Like, whenever I see Calipari, I wrote like Calipari versus BBN, and I was like, what?
That was 10, 12 years of habit built in right there. But no offense to Arkansas and Calipari. I think, obviously they switched up their offense last year. They played more modern flowing stuff. They had the players to do it and generally were very effective offensively. But I think if I was John L. Davis and I was looking at sort of what fits my game, I'd be going back and looking at how BYU played and how its bigs moved the ball and how much space there was for their guards to play and back cut and slash, because he is a combination spot up shooter. I don't know that he's as good off the dribble from three as he is at the spot. I mean, most people aren't, but particularly him, I think it helps him to spot up. But he is good off the dribble when he gets downhill and slashes and gets into the middle of the lane. And I think BYU, now Kentucky's system under Mark Pope, is probably a better fit for his style, kind of the pace at which he moves and the spaces he gets to on the floor. So, I can understand the allure of going to play for Calipari, particularly because the offense isn't stuck in the mud anymore. But, the idea of playing in that Pope system that he's used for the last couple of years with bigs that can really pass it, to me would be, for a place like Kentucky, would be hard to turn down.
Yeah, John L. Davis, the number two transfer portal recruit, according to 247 and On Three. So John L. Davis is obviously the hottest commodity outside of Kobe Brea. Like I said, you look at his top five, and I think he has to be number one, because I've never seen anything like that other than like the number one guy coming out of high school. But Coach Cal has his disciples. Obviously, Big Z was the first one to walk that way and decide he was going to go to Fayetteville. Carter Knox is the latest, who was supposed to go to, little brother of Kevin Knox, obviously, that played at Kentucky, now going to be at Arkansas with Coach Cal. How are we feeling about Coach Cal and Wu-Pig Sui? Because I saw Big Z, he had a tough time at the baseball game doing it. Cal had to be reminded how to do it. If you've covered Arkansas, you and I both know how much they do Wu-Pig Sui and how much it is a part of who they are. It's kind of like Texas A&M and their chants and stuff. You got to know the game and you got to play the game. How much do we think Coach Calipari is going to be, strung up by his Wu-Pig Sui moments? Because he already looks shook by them.
Yeah, I think... look, man, I love Arkansas fans. They're locked in. I think if you got Coach Cal in the sort of the coaching transition coup of the offseason, I don't think you got to hold, the dude's from like Pittsburgh. I don't think you got to hold him to the,
he's really like the Robert Morris coach. That's who he should be coaching.
He's like from he's from Moon, Pennsylvania, man. Like he's not down there calling the hogs. I think, as long as he gives you a good faith effort, you can't really hold him to like too many style points on it. But, I am very interested to see how he gets on there, just because the problem has never been recruiting, at least not in the last few years. I mean, maybe there's some roster construction, quibbles you could have a couple of years and the year where he had Kellen Grady and just ran him off like Rip Hamilton screens, 300 times the season or whatever was not, the wisest use of resources. But like, generally speaking, he's going to get you good players and the team is going to be pretty good at something. It's just been putting it all together these last few years. And when they have put it together, they got upset by St. Peter's in the first round. So, I think there's a real chance for him to be really successful there, particularly relative to Arkansas, which has been good, but is not like Kentucky level. If you're not in the Final Four at least once every couple of years, you know, you need to leave. So it's going to be interesting to see. But I feel like, generally speaking, from what I've seen, the fan enthusiasm there seems really high, and I can get it because he should have them playing at a pretty high level pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I do think the recruiting stuff versus Kentucky will be fascinating because I think Mark Pope swims in a different pool as far as recruits. And obviously, being Kentucky, he's going to have different guys that are thrown into his purview that he hasn't had before. So I think Kentucky fans, there's going to be a little bit of whiplash when they realize who is going to be playing at Kentucky. But it might be a refreshing thing for them. It might look like the Kentucky basketball that they know and love. You know, from back in the olden days, it did feel like they lost their identity a little bit, but they became like this NBA Coach Cal factory. It was not Kentucky basketball. So I think they're going to enjoy that because Mark Pope, like I said, he does speak their language. So that'll be interesting to see. We mentioned,
I was going to say really quickly, I remember early on in the Calipari Kentucky tenure, that first year when he sent Marcus Cousins and John Wall and Eric Bledsoe and all those guys to draft, showed up to the draft. And that was when he first started really doing his sale about getting guys to the NBA and like, you know, creating generational wealth and all this stuff. Like, it was before he won a national title with a bunch of freshmen. And Kentucky fans were not pleased with this. Like, they didn't see the point of Kentucky basketball being getting a bunch of 18-year-olds, you know, their second NBA contracts or whatever. This was like kind of an offensive idea. And so, when you stop winning, all of a sudden all that, those questions about what you're actually prioritizing at your school come back. And I think you're right that Mark Pope, because he's probably going to recruit more conventional college basketball, slightly more traditional college basketball rosters, will probably get a little bit longer leash on some of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even if he's not playing in the like top five McDonald's All-American best player in the country type sandbox.
And he has a system that you don't have to be that kind of talent to actually excel. I think that there is going to be guys that come in that are 3-star, 4-star that play and look like 5-stars. And I think Kentucky fans will actually be refreshing to see a guy actually exceed the expectations rather than coming up short of those expectations. Let's talk about Coach Cal's old team quickly. Portal Penny, he put out his own graphic of himself. And they posted it all over the place. He is the coach that we always enjoy talking about, Penny Hardaway, of course. He has received commitments from P.J. Haggerty, Tyrese Hunter, who had a great freshman year, obviously, at Iowa State before going to Texas, Colby Rogers, who was playing really well at Wichita State, and Dane Danger, who was a fan favorite at Illinois. So he's already made some splashes in the portal. Obviously, Penny, a sour taste in his mouth at the end of the season, but it seems like he is trying to change the tune of Memphis. Do we have hope for the second iteration of Penny Hardaway? He's already lived his first life there in Memphis, and now we're trying to get into the second run, so to speak. And how do we feel about Penny 2.0?
Yeah, I mean, talk about, you know, shifting roster construction strategies, right? Like when he came in and he was all, Mr. I'm going to get every good Memphis kid signed up immediately, which at the time there were a few to go around, and kind of a similar recruiting pitch as Josh Pastner before. I mean, you know, Josh Pastner recruited extremely well early in his tenure at Memphis too, particularly locally. And that's a thing that Memphis fans, I think, really care about is like, if there's a 5-star Memphis kid, and there often is, he should be playing at Memphis. So, you know, and then Penny has switched to sort of a little bit more of a hybrid to now like full on, let's be the oldest team in the country by like a lot. You know, they were super old last year, really physical, looked good early in the year. Honestly, they looked like they were going to be a really tough team and then fell away, kind of figured it out down the stretch. I mean, I've had a weird sort of take on Penny for a while, because I think he's kind of underrated. You know, I think he's a little bit better than people give him credit for. I think he got kind of a bad rap coming in because of the way he, you know, how brash he was talking about the players he was going to get and how they were going to play at Memphis and all this stuff. I think if you looked at him and you're like, okay, we're hiring an inexperienced coach, we're going to give him a few years to figure it out, and you looked at sort of his results, you wouldn't be like blown away, but he hasn't been bad either. You know, they're usually, even when Houston was there, they're, you know, competitive at the top of the top of the American. So,
and they could have beat FAU and made a run to the Final Four, and we're all talking about Penny in a totally different light.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think generally speaking, I'm okay with Penny. I think he's fine. I think this roster, particularly Tyrese Hunter, that's like a player that makes a lot of sense for him. Really aggressive defender. Doesn't have to be the most skilled offensive player, although I think he's, you know, pretty good. Decent step back, off the dribble shooter. Okay at Texas, not amazing. A little bit of a, you know, not a great fit next to Max A. Smith last year. That was a little bit of an awkward combination, but Yeah, good player. And I think Memphis is going to be interesting to see because, again, I think Penny gets a, like, look at this clown rap from a lot of media people sometimes. And I think it's just because he was a little bit over the top in his first few weeks on the job. And obviously the James Wiseman stuff, you know, with him.
And he's attacked the media in these press conferences before. Yes. And as soon as you do that, I think the media basically turns on you and they've already turned on Penny.
If you don't win at a super high level, then you start to get it in the neck pretty quickly. And I think he's probably, because of that, he's gotten a little bit underrated. But this past year was disappointing. And yeah, it's time, as you kind of mentioned, it's like 2.0 or 2.5 version time to kind of figure it out because that's also a program whose fans want to win at a pretty high level and they have some money, NIL money to throw around and they want to see results with it.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, FedEx has decided they want to be the bad guys of the year. They have announced, I mean, I think it was already an announcement, but it somehow got aggregated again, the millions of dollars they're willing to pour into Memphis Athletics. So shout out to FedEx. They're making moves and Penny Hardaway is not afraid of, you know, dropping some bags and making things happen. So that's what we love to see. A few other big notes. KD Johnson, you and I have been fascinated by the character of KD Johnson for quite some time. I thought this was a very mature move. KD Johnson is going to go to George Mason. George Mason has sent a lot of guys up, you know, obviously Jordan Miller down at Miami, Tyler Kolek at Marquette. We've seen guys go from George Mason, even Jim Larrañaga, the coach, to go from George Mason. But KD Johnson says he wants to go there, be a Patriot, and be the best player on their team. This was like a portal working in the right direction, I thought, example. What are your thoughts about KD Johnson next year at George Mason?
I mean, how many shots is KD looking to take per game? Because I think that's how are we going to finally see a fully actualized KD Johnson?
When he's the number one guy. Like, this is KD Johnson's fever dream. Yeah.
We're going to see. I will be closely monitoring KD Johnson's usage rate throughout the season, and I expect it to be extremely high because, you know, I think if left to his own devices and not in a team, you know, I mean, he used to start for Auburn, and credit to him, he came off the bench for them last year when he should have come off the bench. I think a lot of guys probably wouldn't have tolerated that. You know, he was a starting guard for Auburn when they had Jabari Smith and were, you know, the number one team in the country under Bruce Pearl, and had, you know, had since taken a slightly smaller role. But, you know, he's like the ultimate completely unconscious, minimal self-awareness player, where he does give you some good things and some intensity, and occasionally will make some shots, or he'll make a play in transition. We're just like, wow, okay. And one, KD Johnson, very nice. And he'll scream whatever. And then the next time down the floor, he misses, you know, an 8-foot shot by 4 feet. So, that'll be fun to watch because I agree. Like, that is kind of the portal. You know, there's always a lot of complaints about the direction of the portal and, oh, it's worse than ever for mid-majors. And it is challenging for mid-majors. But, you know, the best players have always wanted to go and play at the best schools, and that's the case now too. And I think a good example to kind of contravene his argument is a guy like Johnson. It's also, you know, the Indiana State thing, which everyone is lamenting right now. You know, their coach left. Like, you know, these Indiana State guys didn't stick around for another year at Indiana State, and that would have been really nice after they missed the tournament, played so well in the NIT, and had a chance. You know, would have had a chance to have a really good year next year, but their coach left to like quadruple his salary at St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And so why would you not afford those kids the opportunity to do that too, when a lot of those guys are very unlikely to play long, significant professional basketball careers? So, you know, it does work in both ways. And if guys go down levels sometimes too, and they don't have the minutes or the shots. And KD Johnson is a guy who I will be very excited to see put up some shots. Maybe, you know, George Mason's not too far from where I am. Maybe I'll head out, you know, for a big A-10 game one of these nights to see if KD can get 35.
Yeah, in my weird brain, I imagined the mid-majors going up to the basketball gods and saying, we need some of that Power 5 talent to come back down this way, some trickle-down economics here. And they said, best I can do in a very Pawn Stars way, best I can do is KD Johnson.
Monkey's paw curls.
Yeah, right. Best I can do is KD Johnson. And they accepted it. It's good. A few more notes. We talked about it a little bit, but Baylor, obviously getting Jeremy Roach, I find that fascinating. He was a hot commodity out there, and Duke will no longer have him. They do have Proctor coming back, so that is good news. Obviously, you know, their best player, Jared McCain, in my opinion, is going to go to the NBA draft. Kyle Filipowski going to the draft. Cooper Flagg coming in. First, there was Genesis. Now there's mass exodus is what they're saying about Duke in year two for John Shire, 8 players in the portal. But this is just the world we live in. Like, we're not freaking out. It just, the optics don't look great, but it's kind of an expectation, right? They're still getting the number one player in the class coming in Cooper Flagg.
Yeah. And I would also say, you know, I was doing a call actually with, so on my newsletter, there's a tier you can pay into called the founding members. And it's a higher tier. And, it's for folks who either want to just, you know, be a little bit more supportive, or if you want to participate in a monthly call with me, that's basically, you know, probably could be a podcast if we put it out, but maybe a little bit more candid than that, maybe some different language than you would want to put out on a podcast. But, you know, like and we were talking the other night, I was like, oh, Mason Gillis is in the portal. And I was just kind of talking to folks on the call, and I was like, you know, if I was Duke, I would maybe take a look at a guy like that. Because I think that's what Duke needed all year. Glue guy, old, strong, leader, yeah. But also rebounds, guards, makes threes. Like, that was the thing. You know, you don't need necessarily every guy on your team to be a 20-year-old potential NBA lottery pick. Like, it doesn't hurt to have some other guys in the mix. And like, Martin Mitchell, really good player, huge get for Mizzou. He should be like a star at Mizzou, though. He shouldn't be like your fifth best guy. He played well last year. He doesn't really fit that mold in the same way as a guy like Gillis, who can now come into a team that is going to, you know, whatever the roster ends up looking like, is going to be young, is going to need a little bit of veteran leadership, but is also going to be able to give you things that are just like super required to play at a high level that he gave Purdue, which is guard multiple positions, rebound, particularly on the defensive end, hit open threes. And he shot like 43% from three last year as a really flexible sort of 3-and-D guy. So I think that's a huge pickup for Duke, kind of whatever happens with their recruiting and their portal gets, to put him in a team that's going to have a lot of talent kind of almost by default is really interesting to me.
Yeah. And then, you know, they get Malik Brown from Syracuse to kind of just replace Mark Mitchell. And that's the other funny part about the portal. I mean, you have some of this stuff where it's almost like trades, you know. I mean, we saw it with Pittsburgh and Texas Tech. It's like, you have our big, you get Federico. We'll take your guy. You know what I mean? And it's like a handshake deal behind the scenes that is happening in college basketball. But for Duke fans that are concerned, I don't really think actual Duke fans are concerned. I just think, like, you know, it's easy to dump on them and say all these guys are leaving and yada, yada, yada. But that is the world that we're in. It's also a world where guys will put in their name into the portal and then come back. Seth Trimble, run it back. He's going to come back to North Carolina. So that was something when it happened. People were upset. They thought it was the NCAA tournament game. He was going to be gone. His mom was upset on Twitter. Turns out Seth Trimble was happy in North Carolina. He tested the waters of his portal market and said, you know what? I would make more money here at North Carolina. So I'm just going to stay at home and play defense. And, you know, Matt Norlander, reported this, but it is kind of a wink, wink, known deal. We're just waiting for RJ Davis to announce it. But he probably, the expectation is he's going to take that COVID year and play his fifth year. So you get those two guards back. You get Ian Jackson coming in. So North Carolina, they look like they have things a little bit figured out. Wake Forest doing what they do. Iowa State, former five-star Omaha Ballou is now going to be there. So Wake Forest, they go into the portal. Steve Forbes says, give me your former five-star who has not panned out, and I will bring him here, and I will actualize that talent. So Wake Forest continuing that. Stanford, Maxime Reynaud, who was number one on a lot of portal rankings for Stanford going into the portal. He decides he's going to stay and play at Stanford with Kyle Smith. That was big news. LJ Cryer staying at Houston. That was big news. Jani Broom returning to Auburn. That was great for Bruce Pearl. So there is a lot happening. As you said at the top, I think it's actually sound advice. You can't just tune out and just wait for the portal May 1st to pass and see who's still out there, who's still looking for teams, like an Aiden Mahaney, a great Osabor, right? I mean, there's still big names that are in the portal. I mean, Stojakovic from Stanford, if you're interested in like the namesake. Bronny James is still out there. He's going to test the NBA waters. So there's a lot of names that are out there. The portal will continue. We will get more graphics. But, you know, it's a lot to talk about. I mean, if you had to pick one team, one coach, one situation that you would say is quote unquote winning the portal, is it Indiana? Because I do feel like Indiana is the team that people keep coming back to me and saying, I like what Indiana's doing. So I would put them first. But I mean, there's obviously Kansas, Michigan, a lot of names you could throw out.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Missouri's gotten two really good players
Mizzou,
in Mitchell and Tony Perkins. And they had, you know, really sort of down year last year, but I think the program momentum in terms of talent acquisition has been really strong the last few years. I think Indiana is probably the answer. I think, you know, if Umar Ballo isn't the best player in the transfer portal, he's pretty far up there. Clear, hugely productive, big guy for a really good team last year. Transferring in should, you know, replacing a guy like Kello Ware for as solid as he was last year is not easy. And Ballo essentially does that. But I think the guards, you know, Rice and who's the other kid they just got? He just confirmed it today.
Carlisle.
From Stanford. That's right. Carlisle. Kanan Carlisle. That's going to be make or break stuff. Because can you make shots at a high level, bring size to the backcourt, which clearly is something that Mike Woodson prioritizes, right? He doesn't seem to have much interest in small guards. He wants guys who are, you know, 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", in his backcourt. It's just, can you space the floor with this team? That's going to be the big question. And it's something that you can maybe already start to break down a little bit based on what their roster is going to look like. And something I'm probably going to write about soon. But in terms of just landing quality talent, Indiana's there. The big question with them is does it fit together? And I think that's the biggest challenge for all of these teams is the teams that do well in the portal, like we were talking about earlier with Connecticut and Purdue, it's not quantity, it's fit. And how, you know, how the player fits your style, your culture, all that stuff sounds a little silly in the world where everything is a Twitter graphic and everything is like, you know, look at the number of four-star players they've got and look at the, you know, blah, 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 points and rebounds. But, you know, Cam Spencer was not a particularly highly touted transfer last year, and he was arguably the best player in the national title game. And one of the best players all season for the two-time back-to-back national champ. So,
and the runner-ups really had Lance Jones, you know what I mean? Who was exactly. Another guy that no one was, you know, waving their flag about and saying he's going to be the best guy. Yeah. And
there were not a whole lot of engagements when, you know, Twitter engagements made when Lance Jones committed to Purdue. So it's like, oh, that's nice. Okay. They got a guard from Southern Illinois. He seems all right. But he ended up being a super important player for them. So that's really what it's all about. And it's hard because there's so much stuff, as we've been talking about, there's so much chaff. It's hard to separate out what's a really good pickup versus what's just like you're just bringing guys in and you don't really know what you're doing.
Right. The must bus, which is, you know, we never know who's on the bus. Figured it out. Liam McNeely is another guy that Indiana did have that would actually be a perfect piece for them now. But he is taking the tours. He just went to Storrs, Connecticut. So he's another name to keep an eye on. Also, Rick Pitino, we did not mention him. He got his first Iwachukwu from USC is officially joining his team. 7'1" guy who he had a heart issue kind of like Bronny did the year before Bronny. But I think he has a lot of potential. He also just got Aaron Scott from North Texas as well. So Rick Pitino is in the portal. I did not want to gloss over that, and I wanted to give our fans an update to let you know that Rick Pitino is putting a roster together, and hopefully they have some lateral quickness. We'll see. Last thing, even before I let you go, the coaching carousel. This was one of the best and wildest carousels we've ever seen. Obviously, Coach Cal going to Arkansas was the big one. It all started with SMU and our guy Andy Enfield making that move. We got Dusty May at Michigan, Mark Pope obviously at Kentucky, Musselman at USC, Kevin Young at BYU, Pat Kelsey at Louisville. We could go through the entire list, but is there one hiring outside of the Calipari, Mark Pope, Kentucky? I feel like those two, everybody talks about ad nauseum. But is there another hiring out there that you say, you know, that has my attention? I'm excited to see what that era looks like at that school.
I'll give you two. The first is Kyle Smith to Stanford.
Love that.
Great hire, right? Like, got Washington State into the tournament. Not easy to do. The coaches who do it are, you know, Tony Bennett, Kelvin Sampson level guys.
George Raveling, Tony Bennett. Yeah, right.
Maybe Kyle Smith is not that, but it is hard to imagine how a guy who had Washington State so far ahead of Stanford in the same league last year is not going to be an upgrade over Jared Haas. So that's one. Number two, I would say, and we'll see how it goes, because maybe this program is just a black hole and it's impossible to win there. But Chris Holtmann at DePaul, that's a good hire.
Like, it's a great hire.
Ohio State fell off under him, and I get it. But the teams were talented. They weren't that bad. They lost a lot of games they probably shouldn't have lost the last couple seasons. And, but, you know, going from, again, all due respect, Tony Stubblefield, to a guy who had really good Ohio State teams up until a couple years ago, is a huge upgrade for me.
Yeah, I think those are two great calls. I like Danny Sprinkle at Washington, too. I did want to bring that up. I feel like not a lot of people are talking about Danny Sprinkle and Osabor. There's a world in which he goes to Washington and you get a legit big and you get a guy who played for Sprinkle last year at Utah State. That's one to keep an eye on. Darian DeVries at West Virginia, bringing Tucker DeVries with him, who's a top five transfer portal candidate, now going to go play for his dad. I think that's a big get. We mentioned Schertz going to St. Louis. That's good. Dan Monson, who was fired and took his team to the NCAA tournament, he gets the Eastern Washington job, and he gets that job because David Riley is going to Washington State. And David Riley is one of my favorite young coaches in the country. So I, as much as Washington State loses Kyle Smith, I think they really get a young coach who is going to buy in. He said it's his dream job. So that's the best case scenario for anyone in Pullman to hear that. So Dan Monson, David Riley, I love that domino effect there. That's really cool. Phil Martelli Jr. gets the job at Bryant. So we lose Phil Martelli Sr. with Juwan Howard getting fired, but we keep Phil Martelli Jr. That's cool to see. Drew Joyce, LeBron's best friend, former teammate. He's the head coach now at Duquesne. That's, you know, something to keep an eye out for Bronny. I say that kind of as a joke, but who knows at this point. James Madison, Preston Spradlin, who I think had a great year going up, bumping up to JMU. Mark Byington goes to Vanderbilt. That's interesting. Konzo Martin is back at Missouri State. That's right. He's a head coach again. Ed Schilling. That's right. He's a head coach again at Pepperdine. Jerry McNamara is at Siena. I think that's also another fascinating one. And then one last personal shout out, Justin Gray, my old coach at Wake Forest basketball camp. One of the best people I ever met is the head coach of Coastal Carolina now. So a lot of good movement in the coaching circles. It felt like a bore for a couple years there as the great coaches were retiring out. I feel like it's got a little bit of juice now. Now I'm interested in these programs and these coaches. How do you feel about that, Eamon? Am I crazy to feel that way?
Well, yeah, I mean, look, any cycle where Kentucky and Louisville are both hiring head coaches is going to be a pretty crazy, because, you know, wherever they're, not only are those big jobs to fill, but wherever they're hiring from, typically, and frankly, in this cycle, not necessarily, because the coaches came from BYU, which is obviously a big program with a lot of success and a huge fan culture, but is not like, you know, taking John Calipari away from Memphis in the way that Kentucky did, you know, 10, 12 years ago. So, the way those hires worked out, I think, is going to be fascinating. I think Mark Pope is a really interesting hire. I can understand why Kentucky fans were mad about it at the beginning when they're talking about, you know, let's pay Dan Hurley $15 million a year or whatever. and they go from that to a guy who hadn't won a tournament game at BYU or whatever. I understand it. But I think he's won the early part of the tenure in terms of getting people back on side. And I think probably the same is true of Louisville, too. I think Louisville fans are ready to have someone competent in the building. And Pat Kelsey is that at minimum. You know, I think he has a high floor. Whether he'll be patina level good at Louisville remains to be seen. But yeah, you know, Michigan hiring a new coach, Ohio State hiring a new coach in the same cycle. You know, you got the pretty successful coach at USC leaving to go to SMU because they're in the ACC now, and SMU boosters want to put a better basketball program on the floor. So that opens up an interesting job for a guy from Arkansas to go, and that whole sequence of events plays out. I think, yeah, it's been an interesting cycle. And I think one thing we have to take a look at is the way new conference affiliations are going to affect all this stuff. Like, you know, would Kyle Smith have made his step up job Stanford if Stanford wasn't doing what it, you know, if it was still in the Pac-12, would he have gone interconference? You know, is Andy Enfield taking that job if SMU is in American? No, you know, probably not. Almost certainly not. So, you know, these new leagues and the way sort of power is consolidating at the top end of the sport is going to be very interesting to see how it affects, you know, what programs and jobs coaches see as valuable and interesting to them moving forward. I think it's going to change the calculus a lot.
Yeah, now we have a world where Dan Hurley is king. He is sitting on the throne. He's doing interviews with Coach K on his SiriusXM radio show where he's like pouting the entire time with his nose up. Like, he's so offended that Coach K didn't recruit him back in the day. I'm happy to see where we are in college basketball. I think it's a very exciting offseason ahead. There's so many more headlines and so many storylines. Like I said, we're still a week away from the portal officially closing. Eamon, you're the best. Where can we find all your work, and where can people stay tuned in? And then we'll let you go enjoy your weekend.
Yeah. Hoop stuff is at EamonBrennan.com. The newsletter is called Buzzer, and folks can check it out and come hang out. We've got a, you know, the season went really well and a really good community that sprung up, particularly towards the tail end of the year. And it was a lot of fun. So come hang out with us in the off season. We'll be back at it.
Yeah. Next year, hopefully we'll all be in San Antonio together and we'll have a good time out there. So it'll be good. And Richard Pitino is only 7 days away from being able to be mean to his players again. So Godspeed to him. One more week of that. Appreciate you coming on the show, Eamon. We'll have you back soon to sift through all the craziness of this offseason. Thanks again, man. Thanks again to our friends at FanDuel. Must be 21 or older and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Kentucky, North Carolina, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, Vermont, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona. 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana, visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia, or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.